This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Podcast, and today we got another special guest, Chris Bell, Normalizing Young Millionaires, is in the building, and this is going to be a special one. Let's get right to it. Wow. One more time, y'all. This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. This is the G Pod. Chris, thanks so much for joining.
What's happening, man? Yeah.
So just to, before we dive in, just for those of you who might not know, we actually have heard of Chris before on the podcast. So if you are not familiar, we got that episode on YouTube where you can learn more about the Sober Bourbon Girl. But And that's where I kind of want to start the conversation diving in here from the early days. Like, just tell the listeners where you're born and raised.
So I'm from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, born and raised my whole life.
Yep. Word up. So shout out to the 252, shout out to Rocky Mount. Sure. And you met your wife at a young age. Like, and I heard one story, but like, I'm gonna ask you, like, when did you meet your wife?
Man, we actually met in like middle school. I think it was like seventh grade when we met for the first time.
Word. And y'all didn't actually become, say, a couple until later in life. So I'm curious, like, for you, when did something change for you where you said, you know what, I actually like this person and I want to try and be with this person? What was that for you?
Yeah, so we went to different high schools. So we, growing up, we're both in the same middle school. And then she left, split off, went to a different school, but she would always kind of keep in touch throughout the year. She would hit me up, text me, just, you know, randomly, just kind of keeping in touch. And then one day she messaged me my it was the end of my junior year. She texted me, was like, hey, by the way, I'm moving down the street from you. And I'm like, hey, I can come help you move, you know, if you need anything. And that was it. We were like 17. That was it from there, man. Ended up going to school together. After that, East Carolina, and boom.
and when you made that offer to, hey, I'll come help you move, did you have any intentions other than just being a nice guy to make that offer?
Man, at that time, she was just always cool. So I was like, hey, this is my opportunity to finally kick it with this girl. I didn't know where it would lead. You know what I mean? I was just getting out of a relationship with my ex-girlfriend. So I was like, hey, you know, well, why sit up here and dwell on what's going on in that past situation? Let's see what Nakia's talking about. And she was evidently talking right.
Word up. And you actually went to East Carolina, G Vegas. Shout out to East Carolina. Shout out to Greenville. Yeah. How would you describe your overall experience at ECU?
Man, I could not have picked a better college, like, period. The experience we got there, man, like, I know a lot of people are like, well, you know, you're at a PWI. The experience when you compare it to an HBCU, it just can't possibly be. Let me tell you, I'm an alpha, right? And shout out to my brothers, by the way. But they made it everything. Like, just being around a good group of guys for the first time. Like, I had never seen that when I first got to college. So when I got around the right crowd, man, I was just like, yo, this is everything. And it's just overall good time. Like, the nursing program, I'm a nurse by trade. So their nursing program was on point. And it just took off. I absolutely loved it. Couldn't picture myself going to another school.
Word. So you actually started out with that nursing background. What was it about nursing that you gravitated toward early?
The paycheck. Just being that's it, man. Dude, I'm going to be 100% honest. Like, I know a lot of people are going to say, you know, oh, well, you love helping people, yada, 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 which, don't get me wrong, that is a part of it. Like, you have to like helping people, right, to be in that profession. But when I first got started, I'm just a young guy from Rocky Mount. And man, my mom struggled like to raise four kids in a foreign country, right? My mom's not American. So four kids, single mom, you know, by herself. When I watched her struggle, I'm thinking to myself, like, how can I avoid that at all costs? Well, I know that I'm a minority, and I know that is a double minority, just being, you know, biracial and being a male in a female dominated field, I know I'm going to stick out. That means job security. And I was thinking like that when I was 17 years old. So that's what drove me to want to go to the best nursing program around, East Carolina. And it was it, man. That was how I got in. But then you realize as you start to go down that path, you're like, man, there's really something to this. Like it's one thing to start off that way, but you do start impacting lives. And when you see people just like, dude, I thought I was going to die, but talking to you, man, I think I got a chance. You know, that type of stuff, It kind of propels you in that direction. And that's how we got to where we're at today.
Word. And so like, where is your mom from?
She's Scottish, man. So she's Port Glasgow, Scotland.
Word. Like actually from Scotland.
Yeah, like all of my siblings, except for me. I'm the only one that was born in America.
Okay, wow. So yeah. do you go to Scotland at all? Or
never. So I have half a family I've never met, which is unfortunate, but I've just never been overseas. But I have half a family I've never met.
Word. Would you like to meet? No.
At some point, yeah. Because I've like talked to them over the years. Like we're all Facebook friends, that type of situation. I've just never met them in person. Like you might talk to, you know, the funny sounding guy with an accent on the phone over the years or whoever, you know, as a kid, you'll know who you're talking to. But yeah, at some point, man, I would love to go over there and meet my cousins and all of them guys. Yeah.
Okay. Word. Yeah. And obviously known for a certain type of whiskey out that way too, which I'm sure would be interesting to check out too.
Man, all day long, you know it.
Word. And so I guess for you going and doing a nursing thing, like given what you do today, like what was sort of like you go through nursing for the money, was the money at some point not good enough? What was it about nursing that ultimately where, you know, it didn't fulfill you?
For me personally, man, yeah, it was the money. Like I was making decent as a nurse, as a staff nurse, I was making decent money. But then when the pandemic hit, I went to go into travel nursing and, you know, I was making more money in 1 week than I made in an entire month as a nurse on staff nurse. So when I got a taste of that and I started really just looking at things a little bit differently, like, man, it's a lot of money out here. If these guys could afford to pay us this, why couldn't we get this before? You know, and why have I been here 10 years and not answered that question for myself? Like, why aren't we making X, Y, and Z? And if I do this for another 25, 30 years, where am I going to end up? And it was just clear. I was like, I'm going to end up miserable. Stress, the workload, and, you know, most nurses, you really have to be passionate and love what you do because I'm telling you, man, that's the only thing that'll keep you going back each day, especially when you're visiting like uncharted waters, like the pandemic during that time. You really got to like it. But at a certain level, man, you start to look at it and say, what do I want my legacy to be? And I knew exactly where I was headed if I stayed where I was at. So I started travel nursing, had the money from there. And I said, where can I put it? Bought my first real estate investment property. And it was on.
Word. And so when you were doing a travel nursing, you're also in the middle of the pandemic. Like, how did nursing change once COVID hit for you? Like, in terms of just your day-to-day experience, did that further, like, put a stamp, like, yeah, this is not where I want to be? Or just what was that overall change like for you?
It was the first time in my entire life or my career where I felt like I had no control. Mm. So I come to work. Dude, I was in Miami on a yacht. Literally, I'm on a yacht eating shrimp scampi and drinking champagne. I kid you not. I literally fly back in to RDU airport and I go to work that same night. And when I get to work, not that same night, like the next weekend, but I flew in the next day. And that night I go to work and my manager's like, hey, welcome. We're the COVID unit now. I'm like, COVID, that's a real thing? Like, this was the start. This is like pandemic day one, right? Oh, welcome. We're now the designated, you know, floor for COVID-19 patients. And we had one or two. And I was just like, dude, I've only been hearing about this on the news. Like, don't I get to say and who I get to take care of? Do I want to expose myself? Like, you got a million questions all at once.
Could you used to get a say in what you want to do and who you did you used to have that sort of say back in before COVID?
No, it's kind of always been that way. Well, I mean, you know, you can dictate assignments if a charge nurse feels like something's heavy, or you can, you know, they're willing to work with you, right? But when you're talking about being a designated floor, it's like, well, everybody feels the same way you do. Like, nobody wants to be here, which is, you know, you understand that. But it's also like, dang, I really don't have a choice unless I want to go work somewhere else and, you know, give up my livelihood. And when I felt that was the start of the pandemic. That's when I said, well, these guys didn't ask me if I want to do this. They have no loyalty to me. So why would I continue to come in here day in, day out, you know, putting everything I have into this when I could do that for myself? And that's when I started to rewrite how I thought. And yeah, just everything changed from there, man.
Word. Excuse me. And so, yeah, COVID was a crazy time. And it was also a crazy time because in response, they lowered interest rates, which made real estate, you know, let's say really affordable or attainable rather for certain populations where, you know, more recently here because of the rates, a lot of people have been priced out of certain neighborhoods just that, you know, around this time they could have maybe afford. But like, did you take advantage of real estate at that time because of the rates, or did you hear you bought the first place before COVID happened and everything?
It was all the same time. So I started travel nursing around June. And when I started to get all that money in my account from travel nursing, I was like, man, I have to put this somewhere. So then I started looking into different vehicles that I could possibly put this money in. And I looked into real estate and said, whoa, I never knew this about real estate. Like, I knew that you could get some money, some cash flow, mortgage is low, rent is high, you keep the difference, whatever. All right. But I didn't know everything that I now know about real estate as a long-term investment. And once I found what I could do with real estate, and then I looked at the rates, I started looking at headlines, I started watching the news, and I realized that, oh snap, this is the best time in American history to purchase a house. Mm. I happen to have these dollars in my account. So once it switched and I realized the urgency, I was literally, man, screaming to the top of my lungs to anybody that would listen, buy some real estate, buy some real estate. You could not have bought anything in 2020 that you are not thanking yourself for buying in 2024. Yeah. Period. True. I don't True. Care what you bought. It doesn't True. Even matter. If you bought anything in 2020, you're happy you bought it now. So, it's just, you know, once you started to kind of look at real estate as an investment vehicle, I saw it as freedom. And for me, looking at my job, like these guys who I was working for at the time with nursing, I felt as though they just had a level of control over me. Like the vaccine was the next thing, right? So as we have mm-hmm. to get injected, like I don't even have a choice. Oh, well, if you want to work as a nurse in the state of North Carolina, you're going to get this vaccine.
And that extended the private sector too. It wasn't just even nurses and quote unquote essential workers. They made a lot of companies made that mandate. You couldn't come to work certain a lot of places if you did not get vaccinated.
Big time. And I just felt like, I'm like, man, it's too political. And at the end of the day, it's my body, right? Like, whether I want to get it or not, that's besides the point. The fact that you're telling me that I have no choice is what I disagree with, just as a man. Like, you know what I mean? I'm just gonna be honest. Like, I don't have a choice. If I want to be able to pay the bills next month, then I have to do what it is you're telling me to do. And that just didn't sit right with me, man. And I said, you know what? And I remember getting it. I laughed because I was like, you got me this time, but I promise this will be the last time that anybody will ever get me, because I'll never be in this position again. Mm. And that was fuel, boy. That was fuel.
Word. And so, like, tell me, like, what do you think it is about the long term? Because like you said, people talk about real estate from the perspective of being a landlord, that margin of what you pay in a mortgage versus what you can get for rent. And, you know, the equity that you get in between. And but like, what was it for you, say, from a long term lens that actually like got your wheel spinning on like, nah, this is really the move long term?
Great question. So how I got started in real estate was, so it was just the perfect storm. Dude, I'm serious. Like, everything worked out to where it was just storm. So I bought my first house, the house I'm currently in 2018. It was December 2018, so almost 19. I saw my house, which I'm very transparent, I bought my house for $300,000. I saw my house go from $300,000 in 2019, what I bought it for, or 2018, to about $440,000 in 2020. Because mm-hmm. I got it appraised just because I started to learn more. Like, oh, well, how much equity do I have in this house? Maybe I can utilize the equity in this house to maybe buy some more real estate, which is ultimately what I ended up doing. So I went and got an appraisal. And the appraisal came back like, it was like $440,000. And I was just like, so you're telling me that I actually own this much equity? And I paid nothing to get my house. I paid not a penny. The builder, brand new house, the builder paid my closing costs. And it was 100% loan to value loan from the bank. So I literally came to closing with nothing. I bought this, paid the mortgage each month. And in that amount of time, in a year and a half, I had $150,000 in equity. And mm-hmm. I said, whoa. And that's what kind of woke me up to, hold up, if this did this, what is everything else doing? So I started to go back and do research on what homes were selling for during, you know, previous years. I looked at where they were now. and I could see it. Then I made the connection with the interest rates. They're saying the feds, this has never happened before in the history of the United States. I'm looking at interest rates and I'm just like, I really, really need to go buy something urgent. It was just like this force. So from there, I ended up actually buying my grandmother's house. That was the first one I bought. And I had $100,000 in equity in that house. The equity out of that house, the equity out of my personal house, it was on. I started buying every single thing that I could, dropping 20% down, 20% down, 20% down. Turnkey, I wasn't doing any renovations, maybe a little bit of paint here and there. Very minor renovations when I was first getting started until you go to the next level, which I was doing full renovations, full guts, free, full rehabs. And that's what we currently do.
So in the early stages, it all, so like, I feel what you're saying. Like it was and still is a very interesting time, but what markets are we talking about? Cause the Triangle is a unique market. Are we talking about the Triangle or are we talking about other markets where you bought these first properties?
Yeah, so this market, this is closer to back home. My first property was in Nashville, North Carolina, just outside of Rocky Mountain, North Carolina. And then I started to look at the market in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and I started to put it together. Hey, I believe it still is, but Fort Bragg, I think it's now Fort Liberty. But
oh, for real?
Liberty, yeah, they call it Fort Liberty now.
It's going to always be Fort Bragg.
And right. I'm like, dude, anybody like Fort Liberty? Like,
yeah, what is that? I don't even know where that is.
Everybody forces it. They're like, well, we have to be politically correct. I'm like, bro, that's Bragg. I'm from here. Like, I'm from this vicinity. Like, we know that it's Bragg, right? But it's the largest military base in the world, or at least it was at one point. And if it's not still, it's definitely still probably top three or four. So I said, well, look, man, these military guys, that's just common sense. My father was in the military. That's how he met my mom in Scotland, right?
Word.
So I'm like, well, all these military guys, they're coming in and out. They're going to need somewhere to stay, man. They're short term. I can offer a year lease. Boom, boom. And they're going to pay. And they're usually pretty self-sufficient in how they handle their rentals. And I was right, man. So I started looking at houses that made sense. I had people back then, interest rates were so low, people were actually advertising 10 and 15% down.
Right.
Getting investment property. So I was dropping I dropped 10% down like a $100,000 house. And so I'd be in it for 10 grand. This is turnkey. And all of this stuff, if you ever go on my Instagram, you can go back and you can look at every single house I've ever purchased all the way up to 21. They're all documented, right? So this was my first one in Fayetteville. I bought it for 10% down. I put down 10 grand. It was turnkey on 100 grand. And now that property is worth 189K. And the mortgage on it, I think I still have like 80K, but it's at less than 3% locked in, and it rents for $1,450 on a $500 mortgage.
Right.
And I could see that happening in real time. So then we just started, I was looking for money everywhere. I was cashing out 401Ks. I was just trying to like get whatever capital I could to do as much as I could.
So you really went all in, like all like to get the capital. Cause that is something I think that for the average person, unfortunately on average, most people don't do well saving month to month, year to year, to where you can have, say, like you said, the capital needed to come in with eventually, because you know, maybe in the early stages you can get away with anywhere from 0 to 5% down. But at some point, once you start buying multiple joints, they're going to expect that you have 20% in most cases. In these unique cases here, like, you know, like you said, maybe 10%, but anywhere from 10 to 20% you should expect to have from an investment standpoint. Like, what do you recommend? Just like 401k, but even before that, like, how do you think people can really build that initial capital to even entertain some of this stuff?
Yep. Great question. So one of my biggest things that people have heard me say time and time over the years is it's not about how much money you have. It's about how much money you have access to. That's like one of my quotes, right? And I say that because, man, when I first got started, I had equity, but I was bringing in some good money, but I still had this scarcity mentality. Like, oh, we need to keep our debt low. We need to keep everything as affordable to where we can still pay for what we're doing with our jobs if we need to, right? Let's not get too big too fast. So what I would do was, man, is I would go get credit cards. I would go get 0% credit cards, and I had great credit, right? So I would first recommend anybody start with the credit. Get that credit up. You have to make yourself lendable. So I would go get credit cards and they would be at 0% for like 12 months. Dude, I would fund an entire renovation on that credit card. I dropped $30,000 on it. right?
So how did you get one with, because you had good credit, you could get a great balance at that rate, right? Okay, right. Yeah. But what kind of score are we talking though? Like, we talking 800 plus to get something like that?
When I got started, I had about a 770. I was always around a 770, 775, because okay. I had perfect credit. Like, to this day, I've never missed a payment on anything. Thank God, right? Like, thank God. Yeah, good credit, man. But even from there, you can always start out with get on somebody else's credit card. Like, right? Like, if you have people that are close to you, they see that you're trying, say, hey, maybe add me as a co-borrower on your credit card. And, you know, that'll help you kind of establish credit. Whatever you have to do to get it started. But I was literally just like opening up all of these emails from Capital One, from Discover, just like, who's trying to give me money? Okay, all right, everybody, give me your money. I know what to do with it. Y'all don't.
And the money was flowing at that time too. Like, with that rate low, everybody, like, there was so much money out on the market, man. Like, it's the reason why inflation is what it is today, exactly. Unfortunately. But yeah, they were giving away the free money.
Dude, they were literally giving it away. And I was just like, and it was just this epiphany. Like, dude, when I finally saw it, you can ask my wife, man, like, straight up, when I finally saw it and I saw my ticket out, like, I learned about the Burr method, right, which we can dive into. But when I learned about the Burr method, dude, I literally, during that time, and it clicked and I realized what time we were actually in real time, dude, I literally sat on my couch and was crying, because I could see, like, I could literally see the person you're talking to today. I could see it back then and was just like, oh snap, it just became so clear to me how we're gonna do it. And I haven't, in the past 3 years, I don't think there's been a time where I've not been working on a house or not doing something on a current project. So I never slow down.
And when you said the Burr method, what do you mind sharing what you mean by that?
Yeah, so what I do is, at a certain point, you realize, just like you said, man, you're gonna run out of money, right? You keep dropping 10% down, 20% down, you're gonna run out of money. So I needed to figure out a way to try to use the same money over and over and over again. And so I found Brandon Turner when he was with the Bigger Pockets podcast, David Green, and I was just like, dude, what is this Burr method? It's when you basically, you can borrow money, you can use your own money, you buy a house, you buy it in all cash, you renovate that house, so fix it up, which is going to force the appreciation. So you bought it down here, you bought it low, it goes up, right? And then you're going to rent it out, because you can also get an appraisal based on how much a particular property is rented for. Or they'll look at the rents and they can also base your appraisal off of the rents that you're receiving. And so after you rent it out, you're going to refinance it at the higher value, which will hopefully, if you ran your numbers properly, you're going to get all of your money back. A lot of the times, plus some, if you want to pull some of that equity out on the refi, you'll get all of your money back. You just repeat the process, is the last R. So we're going to buy, renovate, rent it out, refinance, and repeat.
And I see how you're sort of playing in the margins there so it does require some thought and analysis. But the other thing that's low key that requires, you said, fix it up. As somebody who's had a home and fixed it up and, you know, married to somebody in the world of real estate, good contractors, trustworthy contractors, man, that is like almost like two words that don't go together. If I'm being honest, it is tough from a rehab perspective. Do you have a skill set in that building, or how did you even find an opportunity to work with someone or work that consistently in these types of projects? Because that's hard to find that type of help.
If I told you, man, it just doesn't even make sense. And that's why, you know, I've never been like a super religious guy, right? But me and my wife are Christian. We go to church in Durham, actually, World Overcomers in Durham. And, you know, dude, the only thing I can say is just God. Like, God has literally put everything that I've needed right in front of my lap, literally. And that's the only, I mean, and that sounds crazy, but that's it. Because when I first got started, man, I just said, I know I need to do it. And I would rather sleep in a cardboard box than to live my life like this for the next 30 years. So I said to my wife, I was like, even if it bankrupts us, we're going to go and figure this thing out. So we bought our first Burr. I mean, this was after we already had like three properties. We're at like three or four properties. And I tell my wife, and no, we're actually at three. I bought two properties in 2020 and I already had this one. So I had three total in 2020. I looked at her and I said, I'm going to buy four in 2021. I said that in 2020. So I'm going to buy four houses. And she's like, well, how did you plan on doing it? Most people would be like, oh, we don't have money. You can't. No, Kia was like, well, how do you want to do it? I said, well, I found out this thing called the Burr method. I say that to say, I bought that first prop, my first property for seven, my first Burr property for 72 grand. And I had no idea how I was going to get contractors to fix it. I didn't know any contractors in Fayetteville because I was buying turnkey. I didn't know what I was going to do, but I knew that I was going to figure it out in action.
And that term turnkey, just for like, can we say what we mean by that?
Yeah. So turnkey is typically when you can actually literally turn the key and move into the apartment. I mean, the building, house, whatever it is, you can turn the key and it's rent ready. It's good to go.
Right. And you're buying them already in that condition so that the renovations don't have to be but such a heavy lift. Is that the thought?
Right. And most of the time, I mean, if they're completely turnkey, they're literally turnkey. They just move in. Right. But some of the turnkey stuff is like, oh, you know, the entire house is great. We don't have to do any renovations, but you need to come paint this room. You just need to paint this back room, maybe swap out some, you know, door handles over here. Just very, very minor stuff. Mm-hmm. It's what we consider turnkey.
Word. Yeah. And so you bought that first joint for 70 stacks.
72.
And it was in Fayetteville.
Fayetteville.
Word.
In the hood. Hold up, man. Let me not just glance over that part. Bro, Fayetteville in the hood.
Okay.
It was in the hood of Fayetteville. what people were telling me was the hood.
What made you get it, given the neighborhood and like what made you swing on it?
Because, bro, I didn't see the hood. I went there and was like, this is the hood? Like, no. Well, it just depends. Well, this particular road, it just had busy traffic. So I'm thinking to myself, and there are some neighborhoods, but on this particular house and the road that this is, I'm just like, I don't see it. It's too much traffic. Unless people are just doing drive-bys every day, it's a two-lane busy road, like extremely busy. So I'm like, how can there be any drama on this road? Now I realize, okay, they're talking about within those specific neighborhoods and then some of the areas on both ends of the street. At the time, I just didn't see it. And I actually set the comp for the entire neighborhood.
Oh, word.
Yeah, so once we got up in there, man, once we got into that first one, the contractors came in. I met a guy who just had some of the most talented dudes I had ever seen do some work. Like they did it. I bought the house for 72K and I ended up putting $30,000 into it. I was all in for 102 grand. Now my eyes lit up when I saw it because they had a carport that was enclosed and they had a closet in there and they had a couple of windows. And what they didn't realize was they never included that square footage and they only classified this property as a 3-1. So I bought it as a 3-1. We were able to add a half bathroom to the master bathroom. And then from there, we were actually able to get it reclassified and we included that other room, that additional room, as a fourth bedroom. So we're able to convert it from a 3-1 to a 4-2 as well. Word. And I saw that opportunity as soon as I walked in there. I was like, whoa, this is an extra bedroom. And I said, look, I'll give you cash today. If you'll, you know, I was just in a position at that time from the equity I had. It was borrowed money. It's not my money. I'm borrowing it from the bank. I was using my equity to say, hey, I'll give you cash. And they jumped on that offer. We renovated it for 30K, all in at 102. Ended up appraising for $168,000. So I ended up taking out 80% loan, 80% LTV. I think it was like 134 or something like that. So in one swoop, I was able to make $32,000 tax-free because I didn't technically make any money. I just borrowed money from the bank against a property I owned that was worth 168. So because I didn't make any money, I had $32,000 in profit tax-free. And I'm just like, oh, snap. And then the crazy part was because the interest rates were so low, I locked it in at like 2.8%. So the mortgage was like $600. And it currently rents for like $1,500 on that property.
Yeah.
So back then, I was still getting cash flow from the $600 mortgage to the, I think the first rent on that property was like $1,100. I was like, so I'm making $500 a month before expenses, probably profiting about $300 a month. And I just pulled back 32K in cash and I was hooked. I was like, man, where can I get more money? Cause I have to do this again. And that was it, man. We did it. That was my probably like my fifth house and we're at 21 doors now. So we've been rolling.
Yeah, man, that's crazy because like I said, this is a time period where with those interest rates being so low, like, let me ask you, if it was the present day in the market, would you still be at 20 houses in the same time period?
The way I like to look at it now is if I was the investor that I am today in 2020, my net worth today would already be 10x. And I mean that in every which way possible. I know 10 times the amount of information now that I knew back then. So insert creative finance. All right. So I didn't know. The truth is, man, with this real estate thing, there's no real rules for investors, right? Like when I say that, I mean, you could put an offer out there for anything. You could send somebody a legit offer for $5 on a house. Mm-hmm. They're not going to, I mean, you know, whatever, right? But what I did not know was that you didn't need realtors to do this, right? I didn't know that you didn't need realtors. I didn't know that I could just represent myself because I know what I'm looking for. And I started to realize more and more that, and it's no bash on realtors. Shout out to all the good realtors that actually, you know, take it seriously and they know how to work with investors to benefit the clients that they represent. I was just getting bombarded by these realtors who didn't understand what I was trying to get at. They did not understand that I was like, hey, I feel like your client's about to go into foreclosure. I can do a subject to deal and I can take over their mortgage and we can get them out of the situation. And they didn't know how to relay that. Or if there are certain guys who, you know, not everybody's broke. Some people have money and they want to sell a property, but they don't want to get hit with the capital gains implications that are going to come with selling that property. They'll, you know, allow you to come in and say, hey, man, you know what? I'll finance it to you. It's paid for. I don't have a bank note on it. Just give me $500 a month. And, We'll actually do it at 0% for 30 years. Mm. You know, I didn't know that that was a thing. So I was not approaching these deals, realizing that I actually had that kind of leverage. And most people don't. Most people don't realize that anything goes, guys. You can get as creative as you possibly want to get a deal done.
Word. And so going all in with the real estate is one thing, but then this normalizing young millionaires brand, like at what point did that become a brand and a name for itself?
I remember the day I was out on my screen in porch and Kia was doing our taxes. And I remember the day that she realized that we were millionaires and I was 31 years old. It was in 2021. And babe, we got some money. And she said it just like that. She said, baby, we got some money. And I said, what are you talking about? She's like, well, I'm doing taxes. I'm trying to get all these spreadsheets right. And I'm looking at our net worth and it's at like 1.2 million. And I'm like, let me take a look at that. So when I realized it, it's like something clicked and I was like, man, okay, let me take a look at how much money we're actually bringing in. And I realized that day that if me and her were to both stop working our jobs, we could still afford, you know, my house. We could afford all of our bills. We could afford to live our current lifestyle because we were bringing in that much cash flow. And this was like 7 or 8 doors in. And just because the deals were that good. And they've only increased in value over time, right? When I realized, I was like, well, we're millionaires, you know, but like, there's not enough young people that you know, do what we do or know what we know. I was like, well, how do we make this a normal thing? I said, well, I'm gonna make it my objective to try to educate people on you're not that far away from a million. You're not as far away as you think you are. A couple of moves, you could literally be a millionaire. But it's not so much it. The millionaire is one thing because I feel like that's when I personally reached like enlightenment with money, right? I felt like I put a lot of the stuff together once I was around that pivotal point. But what it is, man, is the financial freedom, dude. That is everything. Because my whole mantra is, you know, I see people who are doing day-to-day jobs and they hate it, bro. They hate what they do for a living. Like they can't stand it. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, what if everybody was doing the thing that they were meant to do, right? Like, what if everybody was like the thing that you would do if you did not have an employer and you were not getting paid for it? Well, that's your passion. And if you were gifted in that area, bro, what kind of place would the world be if everybody was living in their purpose and in their passion, right? So when I was financially free and I realized I was financially free and I no longer had to work for an income from a job, I was just like, man, I need this for everybody around me. I want everybody to know this. So I was like screaming it from the hilltops. And that's when I realized, dude, well, it was not well received because people just don't have that mindset. And people only know their day to day. They only know what's directly in front of them. And it's just unheard of to be 33 years old and retired. You know what I mean? And it's just like, how do we make this a normal thing? Well, we do it through financial literacy and we do it through just educating people, man. And always having that door where people can have that access to you. Like I just launched my mentorship and people, you know, will always have that door to access me and try to get that information. That's why I'm doing the YouTube videos. I'm actually cranking that back up. Hence we had the studio set up. I'm just, you know, just trying to put that content out there because if I had somebody like me when I was getting started, I could have saved myself, man, from so much pain. Mm-hmm. Like, don't get it twisted, man. It's been a great journey, but there have been times where you wonder, why am I doing this? And you know, it's difficult at times, but yeah, man.
Yeah, like, can you speak to maybe, you know, what has kind of been, I guess, the biggest, you know, maybe let down from an investment standpoint since you've gone all in? And I want to speak to this maybe a little bit later, but like the risk tolerance that you got to have to do what you do, I think is pretty higher than what the average person's willing to tolerate. But like, can you speak to the other side of risk? Because investment, you know, it's not always up. Things happen where you're going to take losses. What can you speak to from that front in terms of when things don't go your way?
Man, my last two or three properties have been from bailing out other investors that are bankrupt. And because they were bankrupt, I had all the advantage, right? In the negotiations. Now, luckily, I'm not a greedy guy. If I can make the deal work, my ultimate goal is to make it work for everybody. Because then we walk away, everybody's happy, and maybe we get to do business again in the future. There are a lot of things that can go wrong in this business. Most of them are people underestimating their renovation costs or overestimating how much they can get on the ARV, the after repair value, or your appraisal value. They either overestimate that or they're underestimating how much it's going to actually cost them to do these deals. So one of my mottos is I always win on the buy. So when I buy a property, I couldn't mess the deal up even if everything possible went wrong. If everything that could possibly go wrong goes wrong, I'm still going to be in a good spot. I have two rules in business. That rule is, rule one, never lose money. Number two, never forget number one. So never lose money. Pretty much. So how do you bulletproof yourself from losing money? Well, you don't just buy any and everything that gets thrown your way. You spend time analyzing, as long as you don't get paralyzed. Analysis paralysis is a real thing. So you want to be strategic. You want to have a certain buy box. But when it comes, you need to be ready to pounce on it and go after it. But you can mitigate your risk in this business on the front end by knowing exactly what it is that you're looking for. And do not, by any circumstances, bend on that criteria. Because every time I've ever went over budget by a significant margin, it's because I was being subjective instead of objective. I was putting my emotions, my opinion on certain things that were clearly not what I was thinking. But I was like, oh, we'll make it work. It'll happen. You know, don't bend. Get your criteria in order. See what type of houses fit your criteria and go from there. But don't bend on it, because that's where you ultimately mess up.
Like, where did you figure out how to make these calculations in terms of what you mentioned? I can't remember the acronyms you just mentioned, but the price after the investment, how much the investment costs. Like, how did you even start to think about how to make those calculations?
So, man, I have got to shout them out, man. Shout out to the guy that taught me everything I know in real estate. The guy named Chandler David Smith. All right. That guy, you can find him on YouTube. Shout out to that guy. He had a course, man. And I haven't had a chance to directly talk with him. I've DM'd him, and recently I've talked to him through DMs. We've got, you know, a good chat history. But when I found his YouTube channel, he was the only person on YouTube that was actually giving out the information that he was giving out. Like, he was saying, hey guys, I just bought this house for $387,000. The insurance is $600 a month. The taxes are this much money a month. This is how much I'm going to get in rents. This is how I found out how much I'm going to get in rents. He put every single thing, like, he made it so dummy proof that I was like, oh man, I can start practicing this right away. So then I started plugging in some, you know, he actually has a calculator, the Charlie Delta Samuel CDS rental calculator. It's an app, and you can plug in your numbers on these properties, your purchase price, how much you're going to get it, you know, your down payment, your interest rate, term, anything, right? Your renovation costs. You can plug it all in and it'll tell you how much money you're going to need in order to buy this property and renovate it. You're all out of pocket expenses. That's a certain number. This is how much this deal is going to cost you. How much is this deal going to make? So then it'll tell you how much this deal is going to bring you in annual cash flow. And you can say, hey, if I make this much cash flow, this is X percentage of my amount of investment, that initial, you know, whatever that number was. And that's your cash on cash return. That's your return on investment after expenses. When I had that tool, that calculator app, and he was actually giving out step by step every detail on how to run your numbers, he launched a course. And his course, I might have been the first person to sign up. I signed up in the pre sign up period or whatnot. And it was $100. And knowing what I know now, I mean, if I could have had him take me to the side and give him that information, I'd have gave him $100,000. Seriously. because nobody else was putting it out there as simply as he was. And I took his course, and that's when I learned how to run my numbers.
Word. Oh, that's dope, man. Another YouTube University story, which I've had other folks on the pod who have learned because they were on YouTube and found resources that were out there. In your opinion, when we talk about that profit margin, right, like what you actually spend versus how much you're looking to make, I've heard people say that 10% is a good thing to aim for. What do you think about a good number when you're looking for a good profit?
All I make is profit now, right? Because I don't have any of my money tied up into any of these investments. I'm always looking to do the burr. So I'm pulling all of my capital back out. So that takes all of my risk out of it. And if I can't do that because we get in over our heads or something bad was whatever, my end goal will be to sell the property and I still be profitable. So for me, when I first started out on those turnkey properties, because I'm just putting a down payment down and expecting a return back after expenses are paid, right? I was looking for 15%. And see, he taught that. He was like, man, listen, if you want to be foolproof, go 15%. So that even if you end up making 10%, bro, you're making 10%. You're good. But I used to classify myself as a real estate investor. But now it's just umbrella. I'm an investor because I'm in cryptocurrency, precious metals, whiskey, like you name it, I'll buy it, right? If I feel like it can give me some value over time. That being said, the S&P 500 is going to give you a guarantee 8 to 12, you know, on average. So if I can't get at least 15, if I'm going to put my money somewhere, it's not worth me doing it, especially with the way that inflation has been previously. I mean, we're cooling down now, but because Bitcoin is skyrocketing, you got the Fed talking about they might not even decrease rates. So so who knows where that's going to go? But, you know, if I can't get 8 to 12%, I usually don't buy it. But all deals now are we try to do 100% profit.
Oh, word. So like, how often do you have to like dedicate to research in a given day to find these opportunities? Or how do you just, because these opportunities to get what you're looking for, I think you have to find, you know, diamonds in a rough to some degree. Or would you disagree with that?
Man, I used to think that before I was getting them. Now I just attract them. Now I'm turning away in any market, whether the market's hot, cold, doesn't matter. I'm getting more deals in than I can actually deal with. Mm. And I've actually had to force myself to slow down to where we don't get over leveraged, right? Like I now have lenders in my pocket, but I'm still at the point where even up until this point, have always used my own money, leveraged money, but it's still my money based on my person, my businesses, that sort of thing. But now we have other people coming in who are going to help fund. So you don't want to over leveraged at any point, which is very, very easy to do. So now we're stopping that and we're going to focus more on being comfortable with selling some of this stuff, right? We're going to open up to the idea of selling some of this stuff. I have two properties that we're about to finish construction on that we're going to sell. I say that to say I go straight to my realtor and I have the best team from every aspect around me. I put my realtor up against any realtor in Eastern United States. Why? She's not just a realtor. She's a registered nurse, still practicing. Like I just retired in July of 2023, but she's still practicing, registered nurse. She is a wholesaler, active wholesaler. Like always, she's wholesale me deals. A couple actually, licensed realtor. She does it all. That's my girl. And I'm just her top client because I don't play. Like if I'm going to buy it, I'm going to buy it. You know, what do we need to do this thing? And that's why I always say real estate people business. It's not a property business. Like I've gotten deals that I don't get if I don't know this person or that person or whoever. I get deals sent to me. Man, I bought a house in Greenville, North Carolina back in December. I had a dude reach out to me in January. He texted me. He said, Chris, I'm a wholesaler. I see that you just bought this house. I'm actually in a couple of groups that you're in on Facebook. I found your number from, you know, Skip Tracing you whatnot. Here's the thing. I have this house on the street behind the street that you just bought on. And if you want this house, we can negotiate. And he was a wholesaler. So he reached out to me. I was just texting this guy. Dude, within 5 hours, we had the property under contract. And he also hit me with the caveat of, by the way, I'm told that you're the guy to go to if, you know, you're the guy that can help people get out of their situations, figure things out quickly. It's Tuesday. This guy 100% has to close by Friday.
No, I feel what you're saying.
I said, well, listen, it sounds like you just told me you're about to give me a significant discount. So we ended up buying that property within 3 days. I went down there, saw it, and I actually owned the house across the street, like on the next street over. So I knew what the comp was. And this house was bigger by 500 square feet. Mm. So we ended up buying that house like $67,000. This was in January. We bought it for $67,000. It's going to be It already had HVAC, electric is run, plumbing was run. It's just down to the studs. So we have to put a roof on and some drywall. We'll probably be in it. I mean, at the very max, 20, 25K, but it'll be worth double that. It'll have a $200,000 ARV after.
Yo, so how do you personally feel? Because, you know, I do own a property that I rent out to a tenant, and that's the first time I've ever done something like that in terms of like landlord owning and renting something out. And I got to admit, man, I don't really like enjoy doing it personally. Right. I'm curious, like, what's your just opinion of being a landlord, and do you use a property manager or what?
My strength, bro, is acquisition. So because my strength is acquisition and I've noticed the direct correlation of my time and being able to acquire. Right. So there's no way. That's the reason why I retired as a nurse, because I knew that I could make more money doing what I do now than if I was being a registered nurse, even a travel nurse. That being said, it's never crossed my mind to be a property manager, even for my first property, because I knew I just don't want to deal with tenants, bro. Like, your average property manager, depending on where you're at, you're looking at anywhere from 6 to 10%. Dude, to not have to get that 2 o'clock phone call, hey, my plumbing's messed up. Hey, my toilet's leaking, whatever. To take yourself out. Now, here's the kicker though. And I'm learning this now because I actually just fired my property manager. One of them, three. And I'm letting one of them take over. You have to pick a good one. I mean, I know that sounds so duh, but it's serious. And I don't just mean like a good one by Google review. I'm talking about you have to really connect on a personal level if you're going to expand and you're looking to get people to manage loads of property, because we're not talking about chump change at a certain point, right? Like, you got one or two, whatever, right? It's not as significant. But if you can grow with somebody from the beginning and you can build that relationship and you can, you know, get them to manage your portfolio as it grows, you're in a great position. You're in a great position. But yeah, definitely go. I always recommend. And some people are going to disagree with that, and that's okay. But like, if you're going to be a landlord full time and that's your ceiling, like that's where you want to be. But me, I don't do anything with one that I wouldn't see myself doing with 100. I'm not going to manage 100. I'm not going to manage one. And you know, and that's just it. And you grow like that, man. You scale, you learn that you get comfortable with delegating, and that's how you scale. That's how you ultimately become a millionaire. I mean, if I was taking the time to manage all of my properties, I can guarantee I wouldn't be at the scale that I've been able to get to in the time, you know, that we've done it. So yeah, I'm all about delegating and you're employing people. Like, think about that. So if you're also hiring a property manager, now whose pockets are you putting money into? And, you know, so that's another avenue as well. So people appreciate that, man, when you look out and let them manage your properties.
Yeah. Word up. And so like with the brand Normalizing Young Millionaires, it's not just like a brand, but it actually offers like education and services, if I'm hearing this correct. Like what can people get from Normalizing Young Millionaires if they were interested?
Yeah. So right now, man, I just actually launched the second iteration of the NYM Beginner to Winner Mentorship Program. As it stands right now, we actually have two people that we've considered. We're still going to talk as a team as far as the most recent, but we've got one person locked and loaded. And the mentorship is basically just going over everything we started the podcast out talking about, whether it's financial literacy. Like, do you know about credit scores, the impact your credit score has on you? Like, where do you need to start to where we can get you on the path to becoming a millionaire? Because I was a millionaire mentally well before the money came. Like, and now as a multimillionaire, I can look at my timeline, right? And I can see the exact point that I had everything I needed to get to where I'm at now. So how can I help you set yourself on a path to get to where you want to be financially? So none of that cookie cutter stuff, man, where it's like one size fits all and, you know, we're just going to throw you in. We're going to do this. No, it's like, hey, man, what is your situation? What do you need? How can I tap you into my resources to help you get where you want to be, regardless of what that is for you? And I tell people, man, like, I know I stress when I talk about normalizing young millionaires, the money, the billionaire status for me personally, that was a level of enlightenment, right? But I also like to stress, guys, that it's not always about the money, because you could be a millionaire and cry yourself to sleep every single night, right? So if you love what you do and you're happy with what you're doing, I don't care if you're a janitor. I mean, it doesn't matter. If you wake up and you're happy, then you've already won. So I don't want people to think that, oh my God, you know, he's only saying you're successful or you made it if you're only making a million. No, it's not that. It's just the mindset, because I want to empower people to be able to do what their purpose, you know, for being on this planet is for. And I feel like financial freedom and independence can definitely be one of the top ways to get there.
I mean, I agree, man. In a place where we stay, like America, we often do things because of financial obligations. We do certain jobs. We're trying to keep a roof over our heads. And like you said, toward the beginning, you know, what if everybody actually did get to do what they were passionate about? How would everything look? And the unfortunate reality is that if you live here, the only way to really get close to that is to find some way to financially free yourself up so that you're not exchanging time for money. That's right. That's really the only way to do it. And the unfortunate other side of that coin is that America as an institution has always been built off of labor. You know what I mean? Affordable labor, if not free labor in the form of slaves, right? But the whole business model of America is about establishing like really, really cheap labor and getting so much out of the labor and not giving them much in return, right? And it's like, I feel just even from like the nursing perspective, when things go down, it's like you have people that are nurses, teachers that were in these emergency worker fields. And I have a lot of respect for them because they're some of the least appreciated folks given the amount of time, emotional support, like the toll it takes on you day to day for these roles that you actually have to put in emotionally just to be good at your job. Right. And then what you often get in return does not reflect what you're worth in those positions, in my opinion, man. So like you said, having that mindset early on and having the risk tolerance is the thing I want to get to, because it's one thing to know it, but then actually like go for it and to have a supportive partner, a wife at home to say like, you know, yeah, what are you thinking? Like, how are we going to get this done? Like, talk to me about what it takes to like, have you always just been a risk taker, or like what does it take to get that? To get that sort of tolerance to do something like this.
Okay. I'm gonna just be 100% honest with you, man. And I talk to my mentees. So I actually, this is the second iteration that I just launched. So I already mentor 4 people. So one thing I always tell people, the trait that I look for is Deion Sanders says it all the time, Coach Prime. You gotta have that dog in you. And I'm just gonna be 100% honest with you, man. I can smell it a mile away. You know, if somebody's got that quit or if somebody's got that dog in them. Let me tell you about my first set of mentees. I was on the phone with, I'm gonna call it straight out. I was on the phone with Monica, and Monica was on the highway, and she called me and was like, Chris, because I used to coach her as a personal trainer. I used to be a personal trainer as well. So I've always been in the business trying to help people, whether it was with nursing, personal training, now I'm a mentor. I've always like enjoyed helping people, right? So Monica's like, I used to coach her as a personal trainer. And she's like, Chris, I need to do something different. I need to become financially literate. Like, I'm signing up for your mentorship, but I'm on the road right now, and I know you only have 3 spots. Chris, can you like stop the website? Boom, I had just launched it. Homegirl pulls over on the side of the road. Dude, she's on the phone with me, and I'm hearing zoom, 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 and I'm hearing the cars on the highway go past. And I have this on my Stripe account where I take my payments. I guess she had a certain limit on the credit card she was going to use. And this girl punched in that code on that number on that card like 5 times trying to sign up. And I can actually see each failed payment because it was just kicking it out. It was more than what her norm was. It was 5 grand. And she finally went. She was like, well, I'm just going to use my debit card. Boom, boom, boom. Pays, it goes through. And I just remember her like pulling over off the highway. My second mentee, Charisse, shout out to Charisse. Charisse telling me, I met her one time in Rocky Mount at a wedding. One of my wife's friends that she grew up with, we were at their wedding, and they just happened to sit with us at the table. And they said, well, we're looking to, you know, maybe start real estate. Boom, boom, boom. I said, well, go take Chandler's course, right? That's how I started. I was putting his course out there to everybody. Like, this dude is really inspirational. And it doesn't hurt me to plug his stuff, right? Like, go support this guy. He knows what he's talking about. And they take his course. And then when I launched mine, she was like, oh, you're coming out with this mentorship. I got to be in it. So she hits me up on Instagram like on a Friday. And I told her, I said, yeah, Charisse is gonna drop this weekend. As soon as I dropped it, I tell you no lie, within about 1 hour, 10 minutes, Charisse had already signed up. Before I even launched it on Instagram, she had already signed up. So I got somebody pulling off the highway, and I got somebody else signing up before I even launched it, before it was made public. Mm-hmm. And that's why both of them are already real estate investors, and they both own property. Well, Monica, we're actually on the closing line. We're waiting. It was a house in foreclosure that had to go through the courts. Everything's already cleared. We're just waiting on a closing date. So,
and you had a total of how many mentees so far?
So we have Sharice and her husband Eli. They're a married couple. That's two, and then Monica is three, and then Heather is four. Heather actually got into real estate, got really knowledgeable about real estate, and decided, hey, I love this. I see the implications of it. But right now, I actually still love nursing, and I'm thinking I'm going to go do family nurse practitioner. So she just started nurse practitioner school.
Word. Like, I don't want to make any assumptions, but because it sounds like, even though the one is a couple, it sounds like the wife in the couple was sort of the one to take the initiative there on that front. And, or am I off there?
Yeah, so here's the crazy thing. Now, here's the crazy thing about Sharice and Eli. Now, Sharice has got that dog, but her husband, Eli, he's a real chill dude, has got it in him too. And he actually found their first deal. Their first deal completely blew my mind. It caused me at this stage now to become as creative as I've ever become in my entire investing career to make the deal go through. It went through flawlessly after a lot of headaches, but he found that deal. So the fact he was able to find that deal, I actually negotiated that deal on a live Zoom call. I put the clip on my Instagram, but I'm actually talking to the realtor and I get the deal under contract on a live Zoom call, and he brought it to me and I was able to negotiate it and get it done. So he's got that dog and he's just as hungry. So it's the same as me and my wife. That they kind of reminded me of that. I'm like, wow, they both want to get there. And so that's very, very, very refreshing to see, man.
Yeah. It's like, that's the thing I'm going to highlight. Like, you know, I don't want to assume that these are all Black women, but. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sharice, Monica, Heather's not. Heather. Okay. That's my girl. But no, Heather's white.
Shout out to the Black Heathers out there. It's a couple. It's a few scragglers. No. But like, it's just, you know, like the thing I want to highlight is that just, it seems like, especially in this generation, that's what we see more of in the markets. It's like, for some reason, I feel like women are more ahead of men in a lot of these areas where they're willing to not just do the work, but they're also oftentimes in the ones in position to take those next steps, or the ones who are seeking that information to get better, do the next thing. Like, I don't know, like, do you think or disagree with what I'm saying here in terms of, like, if you had to choose one or the other, it seems like women seem to be a little bit more about this and willing to commit to it than some of the fellas?
No, I would say it was the opposite. I would say it's the opposite, almost the exact opposite. But I would say women are in a better position to be able to do what I do. Men are more willing to do what I'm able to do. Because I believe just by a lot of females, just their nature, right? They're more conservative. They want to have the safety, the security, the protection. They want to have that, we know we're going to be able to pay the bills this month, right? They're usually, most, I can't say all, but they're usually more risk averse versus guys are like, oh, we're hunters. Let's go out here, get it. We can find it. We can do whatever. So my experience has been the opposite, but the women, because they're more focused on the security, the well-being, they'll come in with the better credit score. They'll come in already owning a home fresh out of college.
Yeah, that's what I guess that's what I'm saying. Like, they're the ones actually in position to actually do something.
Every chick I know coming out of college was buying houses, and I couldn't understand it. I'm like, yo, why are y'all buying all these houses? Like, here I am, a guy. I was with Nakia, but it's still just like, yo, I'm not trying to buy a house and settle down, but it's because I didn't know what I know now. Right. It's like, I didn't know the long-term implications. I'm just thinking about buying a house and paying a mortgage. I didn't realize that I could get depreciation, appreciation over time. I didn't know any of that stuff. So the women are usually in a better spot, but the guys are usually, and it's 50-50 with my personal situation, because only driven individuals come to me anyway. Like, seriously, man, if you're like a pessimist by nature, I can't stand it. You're going to feel my energy vibrating, man. You're going to be like, oh, man, I don't want to play with this dude. Like, he's serious about his goals and what we're saying we're going to do. So the guys that come around me, man, they're just as equally as driven. Shout out to my man, Brandon Johnson. He just signed up. That was the first guy I said we just took in. With this second iteration, and that guy's from Rocky Mount, but he now lives in LA working at NVIDIA.
Right? Crazy. Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Just talking to him about NVIDIA back then, not insider trading, just talking about, you know, what NVIDIA had going on. He's like, man, I'm so excited about everything they got going on. I'm like, well, you know what, man, let me get invested in that. Let me go buy some stock. Yeah. That was in December 19th to be exact. My stock has doubled since then.
Yeah. The NVIDIA, like, I don't know, man. Like, you know, these tech companies, they the massive growth is, and then you start to see like Apple to some degree seems like, okay, have they finally peaked and it's starting to come back down to earth? It's just this AI bubble is a whole nother conversation in itself in terms of investors and how it's inflating the markets, man. It's crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're about to overtake. NVIDIA is about to overtake Apple in market cap.
Yeah.
They're super close. Now they just dipped. I just saw they were down like 3% on the day today. They just took like a huge dip today. People were posting like, oh, it's human. It's human. Like it's not some, you know, whatever. But it took a dip today. But I think in the long run, I still just don't think people understand AI. I don't think they realize like the implications of where we're going to get to with AI.
Yeah.
It is mind blowing.
No, it's nice.
Anytime you got a Tyler Perry who is building what they said, what was it? An $800 million extension onto Tyler Perry Studios.
Right.
He goes to some convention or he goes somewhere and he sees what AI is capable of. And he's like, yo, stop.
Right.
Stop all of that expansion. We don't need it. AI is here. That's just crazy to me, man.
Bro, I mean, editors, analysts, a lot of task-driven sort of professions, if you will, like those roles, AI is it can do a lot of it already. And even though it's still early, it's so far ahead, you know. Mm-hmm. What AI has done since this time last year versus today, the growth is already crazy. Pause.
Right.
But it is nuts what AI is in its impact. Like, how do you personally feel from an investment standpoint? How do you see AI impacting people's abilities to get into stuff like real estate?
I think over time, man, we're just going to be able to implement AI into the things that we're already doing. So, for example, one thing I've kind of had on my mind, man, I've had so much stuff going on, I haven't been able to dive into it. But imagine like if you had AI that could analyze all of the deals that you could input into it in real time based off a predetermined set of data that you programmed it with or you gave it. Like, hey, I need a 15% return on all of my investments. This is what I'm looking for. I'm looking in this subdivision. I'm just looking in this general vicinity. And as soon as something hits the market, AI has recognized it, paired it with your buy box, and sent it right to you. Like
they don't got that right now almost. I feel like they almost got something.
Yeah. It's kind of similar. They have stuff that'll meet it, but I haven't, and I could just be completely ignorant, right? Again, this is a very fast moving market. So yesterday's technology is ancient today. But I think, dude.
Yeah, by the time we put this episode out, they might have three versions of it.
Man, just look at ChatGPT. Now they got stuff that can look at photos and,
right,
you know, we could have this entire podcast. Only me and you, we're not even online anymore. It's just our AIs just conversing with each other. Like, dude, it is crazy where this technology is now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned like that you kind of started all in with real estate, but then you diversified sort of what you were doing with your money. You know, the crypto market, for example, and you know, just to, so we're recording this at a time where Bitcoin has taken off. It's surpassed its previous high. It's hit a new all-time high. And I haven't looked at my phone here in the last, say, couple of hours. But as far as I know, since recording this, it's definitely above. Last time I checked, it was in like around 67,000, 68,000. Mm-hmm. Now,
hit a new all time high today. Actually, it did. It hit a new all time high today, and then it dipped down.
It plummeted.
Like it didn't plummet like it did last time. But yeah, it's currently at 68,000, 68,200.
Okay. Even the fact that it's at 68, like for a long time in between where it hit its all time high and then markets sort of, you know, settled back down, it dipped as low as to like the 20s.
15. Yeah. Like 15. I think it was like 15,800. Crazy.
Crazy. Crazy. Like what was it about crypto for you that said, you know what, I'm actually willing to. So twofold question. What was it about crypto for you that made it attractive to say, like, I'm willing to tolerate more risk? Again, another high risk tolerant sort of market. But then the other piece is, do you believe in anything other than Bitcoin?
Man, rebellion against the industry. That's number one. Whenever there's a norm, dude, when everybody's looking left, you need to be the person looking right, because that's where the train is coming from. That's about to knock you off the tracks. All right. So we all can't, no matter how much we want to be, we can't look in one general direction. We always have to be looking for the next innovative thing. And especially as Americans, dude, we're free. We can go do whatever we want. Right. So why isn't our money our money? Bitcoin is actually your money. There's no third party intermediary. It's yours. That being said, I knew that the government couldn't control it, even if they wanted to, which is why now you finally see the ETFs coming out. Now the government just spent $5 billion in Bitcoin. They can't inflate Bitcoin. There will only ever be 21 million. The halving is in April. That's why the bull cycle is up, right? Because the supply is about to get cut in half again, and supply and demand 101. So first was just saying, dude, I do not believe in going for the norm. Nothing about me is normal, right? Nothing about my entire life has been normal. So I was like, dude, I like Bitcoin. More so, I love what blockchain technology stands for. Mm. So that's what got me in it. That's what got me interested. And I said, okay, let me look into it, to the point to where I found ADA or Cardano, which is why it's actually, you see my right there, NYM, that coin right there,
mm-hmm.
is ADA, currently the eighth largest by market cap cryptocurrency. ADA takes what Bitcoin started and expands on it by becoming the first proof of stake consensus blockchain, layer one blockchain. You're basically talking about, in like layman's terms, you're looking at the first green cryptocurrency that does not require the level of computing power that an Ethereum Bitcoin, which is why Ethereum had like the layer two, ETH layer two, whatever. They did a conversion to a proof of stake, so on and so forth. The co-founder, most people don't know this, but the co-founder of Ethereum, you have the founder, which they say Vitalik Buterin, then you have Charles Hoskinson, okay, amongst a few others, I believe. Charles Hoskinson is actually the founder of Cardano. So when I listen to this guy, he's reminded me of myself. He's doing everything for the right reasons. As a long-term ADA holder, it's very frustrating because he just doesn't care about the money.
Yeah.
The reason why I love it is also the reason why I hate it, bro. I'm telling you, don't get me wrong. Love is values. Hate what that does to my wallet. I'm just going.
Yeah. If there's one coin that's probably done me the dirtiest, because when everything was going down early 2020, I started diving into crypto and just like taking little random bets every other month to say, like, let me see what this does. Let me see what this does, because it was so risky, so new. I just wanted to test out the waters, right? I had a lot of money was flowing at that time. I was like, you know what? Let me just take a little bit, throw it here, throw it here, throw it here, throw it here. And what I personally came to realize just from my own experience was like, you know, and this is from when stuff was like high to low to high and then it crashed, right? The thing that I lost the most money in was Cardano through the highs and lows of everything. That was where I lost the most. And where I look at everything, cost averaging in, Bitcoin was the one where it was compared to other coins, there was no comparison for me personally in that time period where it was like, okay, this one is serious. Ethereum is in the green currently, but it took a while to get there. Like Bitcoin, I didn't need it to hit an all-time high to get back in the green, if you will. You feel what I'm saying? But yeah, it's like these cryptos, it's just so like, it's just a whole new world, man. It's just, it's not for the faint of heart. Like if how much percent do you feel like is enough for crypto, because it is so volatile? Like how heavy are you leaning in crypto?
Dude, so overall, maybe about 5%.
Okay.
Close to 5-10% of my net worth. Nah.
Since the recent rush, that bug is probably 15%.
Yeah, dude. So let me tell you, man, to put it out there, I don't even know the exact allocation of what crypto is. It's not as much, but I tell you like this, man. So
it's a tolerable amount, though. It's not everything.
To answer your question, man, I've always been a risk taker, right? And I say that because at the time that I started buying real estate, I told you I left to go travel nursing. So when I left to go travel nursing, I was doing the travel nurse thing. I hadn't bought my first house yet. I had to leave my job that I was at for 10 years. I left that job for 8 years. I stayed part-time, but I left there full-time. When I left there, I had to cash out my 403B or 401K. You know, it's kind of the same thing, but 403B, I think, is just healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
I cashed it out and I said, you know what? I'm going to cash this out and I'm going to put it into crypto. I'm going to put it all. Dude, I took my entire 403B and I put it all into Cardano.
Straight up. One coin. One coin.
One coin, man. One coin. I did it.
What's the price of the coin, if you don't mind sharing?
I started buying at $2.06.
And today it's at like $1.
Right now we're at 73 cents.
73 cents. Yeah,
but exactly. That's why I started buying.
Oh, boy. So, yeah.
Dude, I got a ledger. I was buying it my first time. I posted every single trade, right? And I was talking about it. I got videos on YouTube, my $100,000 investment into Cardano, but it was well over $100,000. when it was all said and done, I just started at 100 grand. And I was dollar cost averaging in, and I got all the way down to around the 74, 75 cent mark where we're at now. So this is the first time since 2021 that my portfolio has been up over six figures. Mm. So I've actually bought in, started buying in at almost the top of a bull market. Rode the bull, pause, all the way down. All the way down to the bear market, right?
Yeah.
All the way down in a bear market to the low. A six-figure portfolio, oh, well over six-figure portfolio, go down to about 26 grand.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole time I'm sitting there like, any day now.
Right. Any day
now. It's coming. It's coming. It's coming. And I've kept all of that bag in there. And I think that 2024 will be the year that I become a crypto millionaire. Mm. Just based off this bull run, based on what we're seeing, I feel like ADA has yet to make its move. Like they're projecting $4, $5, $6 ADA this year, or, you know, between this year and early 2025. Dude, if we see anywhere near that, it's going to get scary.
Yeah, you're going to go crazy.
So, and it's already been 310. So the all-time high for Cardano is $3.10. If it even goes back to $3.10, dude, we're in there. Like we're yeah. good.
Yeah.
Which is going to do. I feel like it's the most stable project. I feel like when you look back 5 years from now, it'll still be here on the next cycle. And, you know, I'm excited about it, dude. For the first time, we're back in six figures. So to go all the way from the top, all the way to the bottom, and to see it come back up. And the crazy part is, dude, I think Bitcoin is just teasing us with this 68, 69. I watch technical analysis every single day, right, on Cardano. So the fun thing, the thing that kept my sanity is when I realized that it's not random. Like none of this stuff is random. You think it's random
right.
until you learn the Elliott wave method. You start looking into technical analysis.
It's all cause and effect. I believe in cause and effect. There's no random. It's all cause and effect.
And you can see it on the candle wicks. The candle wicks reflect sentiment. They reflect the sentiment of the people. How do the people feel? Green, it's straight to the moon. Oh, the people love this. They're buying it. They're pulling back. They're kind of fearful. You start to learn how to analyze it. And when you see the trends switch and you see the bull market flip around and you get your five wave confirmation to the upside, that's what's kept my sanity. Being able to think that, hey, there actually is some method to the madness. It's not completely random. And I'm able to look at these strategic levels, you know, getting knocked out and making a killing in the process. It's great.
Yeah, man.
Now,
I've personally narrowed. When did COVID start and everything? That was 2020. So between 2020 and 2022-ish, because I didn't keep going. I wanted to just see long term to like what would happen, right? Regretfully, right? I should have just kept cost averaging into Bitcoin, but I did get it while it was on the downside, right? I got quite a few purchases in the 20s and everything, but I just should have kept going, right?
Yep.
But what I realized moving forward, just for my personal self, this is not any, you know, expert advice or nothing. Mm-hmm. Just for me personally, for like looking for safer ways to do something that's going to yield, you know, those types of returns. If the coin, like I probably touched 15 to 20 different coins over that year, and I watched what they all did over the few years. And if I had to put my personal money on coins moving forward, I've narrowed it down to the following: Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, and those are like my three. And because I got so much in Cardano, I'm just going to keep that loss until it doesn't become, because I'm just going to see what happens. But everything else was kind of like, let me consolidate. Like once my overall book got to a break even, I was like, let me cut my losses in other coins and put them in stuff I trust. So that way it's like I can at least keep my initial nest egg.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I think those are, at least in my experience, those have been the coins that have actually helped me over time versus the other. A lot of these coins out here, it's a lot. A lot of these joints are jokes and games.
You don't want to miss them. But you know, it's like, yeah, they're pumping, but they're rug pulls. You got to ask yourself, what do they do? So the thing about ADA that I love, man, dude, there is not another blockchain in cryptocurrency that has the sophisticated staking mechanism of ADA that I know about. Let's say that. Let's say not in the top 10. It's not another top 10 cryptocurrency that can have the staking mechanism that ADA does. So ADA is the first of its kind. Cardano is the first of its kind. It's the first proof of stake consensus mechanism. Solana is kind of like a carbon copy of that. right? The thing is, as I just said, the founder of Cardano really doesn't care about the price, guys. He's right. doing it because he's like a visionary. He's like, man, we need to have our own money. It needs to be decentralized. We need to be able to have our own governance. We need to have X, Y, and Z. And so he's focused on the core principles. While you have what people say Solana is centralized because the majority of the shares are controlled by a specific group of people, is what they say. And then we all know about the network shutdowns with Solana. Like, they get heated, they shut down, the network fails. Man, when it comes to staking, dude, from day one, I have a Yoroi wallet, right? So I stake it on chain. I stake all my ADA on chain. I've made thousands upon thousands of dollars from just having that entire bag since 2021 staked on chain. I haven't taken a single ADA out. So I got over six figures that's been sitting since 2021. Do the math on that. And we get paid every 5 days like clockwork. And if I wanted to take that money out of staking and put it on Coinbase to sell it today, I could do it in the next 5 seconds.
Right.
Not the case with Solana. It's not the case with Ethereum and Bitcoin. You can't operate on it. It's only good as the currency that it is that hold a value.
And for people listening, staking, you're talking about like to get pay interest on holding it, right?
Like, right. So the network itself uses ADA. That's why it's like the green network. While ADA helps with the consensus model, right? The token itself. Whereas Bitcoin relies on computing power, proof of work, consensus mechanism. Because of that, the network itself inherently needs to use to run itself. So if you delegate your ADA to the pool, it's going to reward you with a kickback of ADA every 5 days as it mints the blocks on the chain. The technology of ADA is just their staking mechanism is so much more advanced. Like, I'll hear people, like, I'm in certain groups, right? Like, I'm in many different investment groups, crypto groups, and I'll play with my friends or whatever. And I'm like, hey, go ahead and sell some of that Solana. I'm like, well, I could if I could get it out of staking.
Yeah, that is true. It take a long time. So just to give a little context. So I am like a beginner. When it comes to this stuff, I do everything just through Coinbase. It's not an ad or anything, but I use Coinbase for all of my transactions. They're a publicly traded company. I have a certain type of trust there. And so the staking, they offer staking through the app where you get a certain rate of return, which a lot of those is almost like a comparable to, depending on which coin, can be comparable to a high yield savings account where you're getting 5%, if not upwards, in an annual term. But I stake multiple coins, and some of these joints, when you go to unstake them, can take 30 to 60 days to get it back when going through the joint. But like you said, Cardano does not take that long. I'm gonna give it, dude.
I could literally send you a token of ADA right now from my staking wallet. They're all staked, right? And when I get an influx, it automatically stakes itself. Like, if I put money in that wallet, because I have my wallet delegated to X pool, that new ADA will automatically go to that pool. I don't have to do anything. It just seamlessly goes on chain into that pool that I'm delegated to. If I wanted to send you some money right now, some ADA directly out of my pool, I wouldn't even have to unstake it. I would just send it to you, to your address. And it would unstake itself, get sent right to you, and delegate itself to whatever you were delegated to in your wallet. That right there alone, on a surface level, that's super cool from a money to money level. But when you realize the implications this has as far as like decentralized applications, as far as some of the stuff that they're creating on chain now, that's been like the hardest knock about Cardano is they're slow to develop, right? They're not about the hype. They're about the longevity of actually getting this thing right. Because when you don't, you get the hype of Solana, but you also get the failures when the network shut down, right? I've never seen an ADA network shut down ever. Not even once since I've been an investor. It's never shut down. I want to cringe because I'm like, Charles, go do something crazy to like make this price go through the roof. We need some promotion or something, right? But then on the other hand, I'm like, dude, everything that has any type of value takes time to develop. Steve Jobs got fired from Apple before he ultimately came back with the iPhone. It just takes time to develop. So it hurts as a holder to not see more innovation, like, just being honest. The long-term outlook is looking even better than I had originally imagined. So that's what kind of keeps me pumped to keep holding this token. Yeah.
Word. And you, like you said, you used to call yourself a real estate investor, but now it's just an investor. And one of the things you mentioned that we both sipping on is whiskey.
Oh, yeah.
And so before we get up out of here, I do want to talk about, because with whiskey, like your wife shared the story of how she got into the sober bourbon girl herself and that being a brand. And it had to do with you in terms of you wanted to get into whiskey, and she made a gift for you. Just to tell the listeners, how many bottles did you receive on your first go around when she came through for the gift?
Man, it was like 50.
50 bottles of bourbon, man.
Yeah, man. Crazy.
50 bottles. And we ain't talking about just, you know, respectfully, we ain't talking about just a regular old Jim Beam. Yeah, yeah.
Off the shelf is there, nah, bro.
Yeah, nah. Like the what you need are within that 52. Right. And so, you know, talk to me about whiskey from an investment standpoint. What does that actually look like? Is it a buy and flip? Are you actually invested in whiskey distillers, or like what are we talking about whiskey as an investment?
So yeah, man. So I've actually I didn't realize until we went to Kentucky. We were in Louisville, Kentucky, and my wife was like, we're at Old Forester. All right, we're at there, right there on Whiskey Row. We're at Old Forester Distillery, and we get to the finish line of our tour, and they give us these coupons. They're like, hey guys, y'all are going to be the last group, but we actually have one box left, and it's y'all's if y'all want it. And we're like, one box left? What are you talking about? And it was their special single barrel release of the birthday bourbon, what they call the Old Forester birthday bourbon. They do it to commemorate the founder of Old Forester. And, you know, they release a bourbon on his birthday, a single barrel. The bottle was like, what's it like?
Retail?
Out the door. Out the door at the store is like $280. And I'm looking at Kia like, man, this is the last day that we were in Kentucky. I'm like, man, I've already spent $500 on some whiskey.
Right.
Like, you know, like, come on, man. How much is enough? Like, I like drinking this stuff, but this is expensive, right?
It gets expensive quick, too.
Right. We got so many bottles at home. I'm like, dude, you know, by the time you buy two or three great bottles, bro, you are, man. So then we leave. And when we leave, she's like, man, you should have got the other coupon. Da-da-da-da-da. So I start looking up like what people are buying it for. And that $260 bottle, I could have sold for $1,000 that day. And that was a 20. That's a 2020. That was a 2021 release. And they create one every year. So, you know, as the years go on, the hype goes, man, dude, do you remember that 2021 year?
Right.
It was because they used and it was like extra sweet, and it was at that type of hype. And once it's gone, bro, it's gone. It's a single barrel. So, you know, the average barrel is producing anywhere from on a low yield, what, like 80 bottles to maybe 125, 130, I think, on average. So once those bottles are gone, they're gone. So if you have a 2021 Old Forester birthday bourbon and it's sitting on your shelf, like mine's still sitting on my shelf. I always said I'd drink it when we decided to have kids, when my first kid is born, so I'll crack that bottle
still,
open.
Still not cracked. It's just there. It's just there to make sure. Yeah. Yeah. Just to make sure.
We got multiple bottles like that. But at the end of the day, too, being an enthusiast, it's like, bro, right? Like, I'm a collector. I have bottles, and I'm like, it's going to be a great day. And it'll just click. It's gonna be like, hey, man, today's the day.
She come through. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm telling you, bro. Man, you up anytime, man. You're a local, so you got to, you know, anytime you want to get something to drink, man, drink something. One of the things it ruins is because now whenever I go to bourbon bar, not so much bourbon bars, because they've got great selections, but when I go to places, it's like, man.
You got
like,
your own at home, man.
Better whiskey at home.
And you got your palate. You know what taste profiles you go for. Yeah, man.
But I'm not a snob. Luckily, man, I'm not a snob. So I'll still get down with some Jack Daniels. Like, you can find that anywhere. I've been all over Europe, dude. I was in Spain. I've been to Madrid. We were there last year. We were in Italy the year before that. Like, ultimately, you're going to always find some Jack Daniels. Like, if you don't find nothing else. Yeah. Which, that's not bourbon, right? Well, I actually think Jack Daniels.
It's mostly corn. That charcoal filtering, so they could call it Tennessee whiskey instead of bourbon. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but like, come on, man. It's like, okay, all right, I gotcha. But they're always gonna have they're always gonna have Jack. Wherever you go overseas, you might see some Jim Beam, but they're 100% gonna have that Jack Daniels everywhere you go. I thought that was just, I mean, not so much a shocker, but when you actually go see it in person, you're like, you have no whiskey from America here. Oh, but you got Jack Daniels every single time.
Yeah, facts. Yeah, man. And like, that's something that I think I've noticed or observed from afar, which I think is dope, is that as a couple, y'all seem to embrace that bourbon community in a way that I think is just a uniquely dope combination, in that you enjoy the bourbons and you have your motive, but then your wife has been able to find her own lane too, and y'all are able to do stuff together. Like, I'm just like, and the name, she gives you credit for coming up with the name Sober Bourbon Girl. So like, just, can you just speak to how dope that is? Just being able to have that designated driver whenever you're ready to get ripped and always having that ride home.
Yeah, dude. So it's really just a testament of how important it is to choose your partner, man, because Kia, dude, she's the opposite of me. So like you said, I'm extremely like risk tolerant. I can go out there and put a bag on Cardano. I can go buy as many houses as I can possibly afford. While she enables me to do those things and she's loving the returns on those things now, she's also like the brakes. I call myself the gas. She's the brakes. All right. There are certain things that she's been able to, you know, kind of dive into that have been like a happy medium, because she finds the thrill in being able to go find these bottles. Like I have bottles that you're just never going to get. Like there are people all over the world that were like, oh man, I would love that bottle. I got it. And it's unopened. You're never going to get it. Right. Like she loves to go for the hunt. That's her thing. She loves finding stuff and she loves hearing my opinion about how I feel about these whiskeys. And it gives us just some common ground to be able to kind of have this thing in common. And then people within the industry just flock to her because they're like, man, here goes somebody that doesn't even drink our product, yet she's repping us extremely hard. She's shouting us out. She's saying her husband loves us and she doesn't even drink it. So it takes initiative. It takes effort. And she's also a photographer slash videographer. That's what she does. She has her own business doing that. A Henna Green Photography. She basically takes what she does with bourbon with me and has been able to build that platform by converging the photography with the stuff that we have going on with bourbon. Then you have the networks, which then leads to more opportunities, more community, more just success overall, dude. And it's just awesome that she was able to kind of come in and do that. She's always been an overachiever in everything she does. So it's no, you know, shock to me that she bought me 50 bottles that weekend, bro. She started off giving me like 10 bottles. Then as like Saturday went on, she gave me like 15, 20 bottles. Then she gave me like the last 10. Then she took me to a distillery when I wanted to get into it, because I think it was like one of the Super Bowls. I went to the ABC store. North Carolina is what we call the package store. If you got listeners from other places, alcohol store where you can buy bottles.
Right.
I bought like 10 bottles. I bought like some Makers, Knob Creek, Jack, just some very, you know, off the shelf type stuff. And I said, man, you know what? I'm going to start getting into this because, and this is the truth. I said, people with money drink this.
I was thinking the same thing. Yo, I go lie. I was thinking to myself, I was like, of all the things rich white folks do, what can I embrace? What can I embrace? Golf. I was thinking golf, but I got a bad shoulder. So it's like, realistically, how often am I going to be out there with the golf? But I'll be out there with the cigar, dude. And I'll be meeting you back with the bourbon. No question. At minimum, I can link up for the cigar and bourbon.
That's how it happened, man. I started drinking it, man. And I was just like, dude, it's great. But I was like, man, I just see people who are living the lifestyle that I aspire to live, man. These guys are drinking this whiskey. They know all about the notes. They got these nice like glasses.
They got the Glencairns. They swirling. Like, they looking at the this? Color. Like, yeah. Man, every day, like, every sip like, is an experience.
No shade on East Carolina, but everybody knows East Carolina is a party school, right?
So Vegas.
When we're coming out in Greenville, we're just drinking. Dude, we're college students, man. We're drinking whatever everybody else got. We don't have no type of preference. We're drinking whatever. So you carry that into adulthood, and that just is a path to alcoholism. Like as you start to just
That's go through true. Life,
you're just turning up every weekend. You're drinking. It got to a point where I was trying to become successful. So I started the bourbon journey, same time as I started the crypto journey, same time as I started the real estate investment journey. All of that was right around the same time. So I was just like, man, I really want to start living this kind of lifestyle. Let's go after it. Let's do it. So I said, well, I know that the person I want to get to be like, which is the version of me now, people that look like that guy, they drink bourbon. So I'm going to start drinking this so I actually know what it is. And I'm not just blindly chugging something, and I'm drinking it neat. So I can actually appreciate the bottle. I can appreciate the craftsmanship for what it actually is, instead of just mixing it with some Sprite, some Coca-Cola, and chugging it just to get a feeling. You know what I mean?
No need to spike it with high fructose. No need to do that.
Once I made that switch, man, and I realized that Cats with Money was drinking this stuff, she was 100% on board and said, I see where you're trying to go with this. Let's do it. And then one day in the kitchen, I was like, man, you should start an Instagram page, like telling people about all the stuff that I'm drinking, because this is some great stuff. You could, you know. And she's like, man, but I don't drink. So how would it be? I was like, you know, just call yourself the suburban girl, you know, the suburban, but play it on like suburban, like we're in the suburbs, right? Like you're the suburban bourbon girl. But then you like, but then again, you don't drink, so you're sober. So why don't we just call you the sober bourbon girl? That kind of sounds good. And I was literally at the sink. I think I was putting some dishes away or something. And I was like, let's do the sober bourbon. She's like, I kind of like that. The sober bourbon girl. Cause I don't drink it. And it stuck, bro. And that's how I got started.
Word.
I started, man.
Yeah, man. I think, yo, man, I go, I think y'all are a dope couple. I like, you know, obviously with the platform centering around those five F's, family, friends, finances, freedom, and future, you know, I'm a big just believer in community, and I love to highlight Black couples who find ways to do things together. I love to highlight that. And when, and I actually heard, I met your wife before I met you because of the bourbon. I'm in the Bull City Bourbon Club and I interview Old Hillside, and she was supporting that episode and everything. We got connected. And then through hearing the story, I was like, you know what? I need to have Chris on a podcast too, because she, just in talking to her, learning more about both of y'all together, and then hearing a little bit about your background with the young, Normalizing Young Millionaires, I've been waiting to do this episode for a minute, man. So I definitely appreciate you giving me this time, joining the platform, speaking about your background, insight into some of, you know, the Burr method? Did I say that correct? Or
yeah, Burr method. Yep, Burr method.
Like the Burr method. Is it Burr or Burn?
Look, you said it and then I messed it up right after you trying to confirm it. Burr. I said the Burr method.
From North Carolina, no, man. Yeah, you got to watch that speech, Burr man. Method.
So B-R-R-R-R. RRRR. So buy, refinance, repeat.
Burr. The Gucci Mane method. Burr, burr, burr. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
But like, I appreciate just you being up here, sharing some of that story, giving some background into how you went from nursing to retirement, to early retirement, to being a young millionaire, to even scaling beyond that. And now you have an opportunity with your own platform to spread that knowledge. You're doing mentorship, doing a lot of things. So we're going to make sure that when we put this episode out, we put all the contact info in the description so y'all know where to find Chris. But just for those listening and watching, is there anything out there that you hope folks walk away with after just checking this out today?
Yeah, guys, just know that it's just so crazy, because I saw this on Instagram the other day. For anybody listening, man, that is in like a struggle or a situation, they're just like, bro, I don't know how I'm gonna get out of it. I don't know what's gonna happen. Or you just are not in a good place in life. You're not in that place in life that you want to be in. Like, understand that everything that you witness on a day-to-day basis is just a construct of what your mind has been programmed to go through from childhood. I say that meaning you're a set of programs. Everything you've experienced in your life has created your experience. To recreate your entire life, you have to recreate your programming. So therefore, you cannot hang out with the same people that you hang out with currently. You can't look at the same stuff on TV that you currently watch. You literally need to get out of your comfort zone, and you need to reprogram the way you think. We were talking about earlier, like, what's the one thing I'm looking for? And I say, I look for people that have that dog in them, because that's the one thing that's going to get you out of your current mindset. Because there are so many times where I try to give people game. I try to give them the keys to success. And they're like, well, I could never do that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You never will.
Self-limiting beliefs.
Self-limiting beliefs, whether it's self-limiting, whether it's just not aiming high enough, or whether it's just not thinking it's possible. Guys, I am from the hood of Rocky Mount, North Carolina. Okay, we lost our house when I was 12 years old. My mother got foreclosed on, you know, and we had to move to what I would consider now the projects when I was 12 years old. So I think that's one of the reasons why I became a nurse, because I wanted that money so I would never have to have that feeling of going through that again. Because there was a time where I thought, as a 12-year-old kid, I'm about to be homeless, right? So that's the reason why I think led me onto the path of becoming a nurse. It's the thing I think led me onto the path of, oh, I could get multiple houses, so I always have somewhere to live. Realizing that it was really just me trying to become the person I am now, and being able to look at it and say, dude, I'm financially free. I've made it to this far. We can do whatever it is we want to do. But it's all an extension of itself, and it's because of my programming. So while I hate, you know, certain things about my childhood that I went through, I wouldn't reverse it for anything, because that programming was in me. So when I saw the opportunity, I was able to jump on it. So for those that are listening that are looking for that opportunity and you're just like in a space, man, it comes when you're looking for it. You know, if I told you I would give you $500 for every red car you see the next time you drive yourself to your job, you would see a million red cars, right?
Right.
But you're not looking for those red cars on a day-to-day basis. Look for the opportunities that allow you to grow and that allow you to develop. And one of the fastest opportunities to do that is reading, right? So I try to read all day, not all day, but I'll try to read, you know, a couple of books or so, audio books. So I'll listen to Audible. I go to the gym. I'll put it on my headphones when I'm doing cardio. Nobody wants to listen to that while you're lifting weights, right? But when I'm doing cardio, just steady state, I'll listen to audiobooks, reading, and then getting around people that are where you want to be. So you have to ask yourself, you know, how are you going to become a real estate investor if you don't know any, you know, how are you become a millionaire real estate investor if you don't know any millionaire real estate investors, you know? So you really have to reprogram yourself. And that's one of the reasons why I started my mentorship. I actually lose money by mentoring people. Right. Because if I took the time that I spend mentoring and I actually put it into what I'm good at, which is acquisition and doing deals, I would 10x whatever I'm going to make. But I always have that lane open. You know, it's not a self plug. Well, I guess it is. But hey, I always offer mentorship.
Nah, reach out. Like,
I offer that, man, because so many people, dude, if I could just latch myself on to a dude that's giving what I'm giving now, I have the keys to financial freedom. And I'm the most selfless person you'll ever see that's going to give those keys out.
I'm a big advocate of mentorship, apprenticeship. Like, you know, I say to get to where you want to go, somebody's going to have to teach you something, right. You know, right. and you can't be out here the blind following the blind, just listening to people who haven't done what you want to do, telling you all their opinions about stuff they haven't experienced themselves. If you're trying to get to somewhere, you need to talk to people who've been there before as best right. you can. And so right. and I agree.
I'm a challenge to people at the top, man, to stop gatekeeping, because there's a lot of people that indirectly gatekeep. Like, I remember when I was on my journey up, just trying to claw and scratch for information. And there are people that I know now that had that information, give it out. Right. And it's the game is to be sold, not told. We understand that. But man, when you see cats that you can identify that have that dog in them and they want that information, they want that access, dude, give it to them. Like, we take the elevator, you know, as Black people, especially, I'm going to say this, right? We take the elevator up, but we never send it back down. Like, send it back down. There is no reason why I don't have to do what I do. I could literally just do my thing, not spill a single secret on Instagram, not give any game out. But I could not live with myself, man, knowing that there are cats out here that were like me when I got started that could benefit from what I know, and I just never pass it on. And that is evidenced through my dude, just look at my best friend. My best friend, I put him onto the real estate game, taught him everything I know, and now he owns 9 properties. And now, I mean, I'll say it, dude, like, he is just of a hard, he works just as hard as I do, if not harder. That dude is really about it. But imagine if I don't just say, hey, man, and it was a hard, he'll tell you himself, like, that dude was just like, I see what you're saying, Chris, but I don't know. I don't think this real estate thing is maybe for me. And I said, well, boy, I said, homie, one thing I've learned is that I don't hang out with losers. And not saying you have to do real estate with losers, but I said, here's the deal. I'm only hanging out with people that invest, that do real estate. So you can just jump on board, man. We just probably ain't gonna be boys no more. And that's what it was. And he said, he hit me up the next day, he hit me up about a week or two later. He was like, so look, man, when you're trying to figure out your cash on cash return. And I was like, oh, what you been listening to? What you been talking about? He's like, well, I took the course, and boom, 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 I'm trying to figure it out. And now he's 9 doors in. So, you know, it was hard at first. I'm not saying overexert yourself as guys who are in the industry that have made it, but don't give up on people, man, because I know for every one person I get that actually goes and buys some real estate or, you know, does something, I got 100 other people that I've talked to for an hour that are never going to make a move.
Yeah.
So that discourages people that have made it to be like, why am I going to waste my time? So I always tell those people, man, at least make yourself available. Like, ask yourself, have I made myself available to where people that reach out to me can actually get a hold of me and I actually do something beneficial? Because there's people who have just told me straight up, Chris, you've changed the trajectory of my entire bloodline because of the game that you gave me. I now own property, and now my son will own property just as a birthright. Like, that just blows my mind. So when you have people that come back to you like that, I can't see other cats, why other cats at the top wouldn't want that same thing. So I just say to those people, man, that are at the top, don't gatekeep, give it to them. Don't indirectly gatekeep. It's not enough to know the game and know the knowledge and prosper from it, you have to pass it back in one form or the other. So that would be my biggest takeaway, man.
Man, word up, man. Y'all already know what it is. This is the G Podcast, where we focus on family, friends, finances, freedom, and our future, and everything else. Shout out to Chris. Shout out to Normalizing Young Millionaires. Shout out to the Sober Bourbon Girl. Shout out to all of y'all out there making moves, man. Appreciate y'all listening and joining us to this for this episode. We are out of here.
Taking no talk now. See you drink it.